Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart Debates Atheist Zaketh, a Psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com.
One morning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob Enyart.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer. Today, Bob, we're going to talk about a really electrifying topic.
Yes.
I mean, I'm excited about this one.
Yeah.
The origin of Earth's radioactivity.
The origin? Where did it? You mean it wasn't always here?
It wasn't always here. And, you know, this is interesting because, you know, I don't think that, as far as I know, that any creation organization has tackled this particular issue.
What a great point. And but now it has been addressed in a major theory proposed by
Walt Brown, Dr. Walt Brown.
My favorite creation scientist, author of the book that we've been selling for years, In the Beginning, Compelling Evidence for Creation and the Flood.
Great, great creation resource. It's a must-have. Yeah. If you're a creationist, you should go get this book. I love the references that he provides. Well-thought-out arguments. It lays it out very nice. Mm-hmm. And then he provides the references in another section that are real easy.
Yeah.
It's just a great
It
great
really
format.
Is. And radioactivity, if you have a nice home and you find out that radon gas is leaking into your home, that's a concern.
It's a concern.
If there's radioactivity produced in the workplace, then people are going to get cancer or have children who are deformed. So radioactivity is a problem, of course.
Yeah, so when Chernobyl occurred, that wasn't a favorite place for people to be hanging out, right?
No, exactly.
So this is not a good thing. And
radioactivity.
So where did it come from? Because wasn't the Earth created as a paradise?
A paradise, wow. So there should be evidence that the Earth is not filled with radioactive elements throughout it, if the Bible is true. And there should be evidence that the radioactive elements in the Earth are somehow related to the fall of man and the judgment of God, such as in the global flood. So, Fred, maybe a brief overview of Walt Brown's theory that the global flood happened when the fountains of the great deep broke forth, that is, about 10 miles below the surface of the Earth. There was a subterranean chamber of water around the entire sphere of the globe, about a mile deep, a lot of water. The crust of the Earth cracked. That's the mid-oceanic ridge that runs around the entire globe that Walt Brown is able to explain. Why is it there? And that water came out with enormous force, eroded away the Atlantic Ocean. That's what the Atlantic Ocean is now. And in the process of that happening, the hydroplates, that is, the plates, like in plate tectonics, the plates that are the crust of the Earth were on top of water, hence hydroplate. But as that water was gushing out, there was tremendous pressure in these hydroplates, in the crust of the Earth. That produced massive electric circuits. And we're going to explain how that electricity formed the radioactive elements on the Earth and also rapid decay. And that's why there are such contradictory measurements when they look at something and they say, how old is this rock? And they come out with measurements that are hundreds of millions of years contradictory to one another.
Yeah, so it was real interesting when I read this. I got a PDF of this article because I don't think, is it part of his most recent book now?
Well, it's on Walt Brown's website, but it has been released after his 8th edition. So it'll be in the 9th edition.
Gotcha, because I had not heard this concept of electricity playing a role in radioactivity. So that'll be real interesting to hear.
So you read through the PDF.
I read through the PDF.
The chapter.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I know that it takes like enormous amounts of temperature and pressure to even change radioactive decay rates, right?
That's right.
So I had never really heard this concept of electrical surges producing this, things similar to lightning bolts.
That's right. So why don't we begin the description by talking about plasma. Fred, what is plasma?
Plasma? Well, you're familiar with the three basic forms of matter, right? Solid, liquid, and gas.
Those I know really well.
You know really well? Okay. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like a hot gas, but it's more, you know, like things that you see in like a welder's arc, a neon sign.
Oh.
Lightning bolt.
Ah. So lightning, the stuff of lightning is a plasma.
Yeah.
And I guess stars are made of plasma, right?
Yes.
So the vast majority of the matter in the universe, almost 100%, is plasma. But here on Earth, thankfully, there's not too much of
it. There's not too much of it. But they say the universe almost is all plasma.
Now, here's what I learned reading Walt Brown's chapter on the origin of radioactivity that I had not known before, is that plasma, something like lightning bolts, also can occur in solids and liquids. It turns out that you have lightning happening in rock, in granite, in the crust of the Earth, when you have a powerful electric field and it removes an electron from certain atoms, you end up generating plasma, and we have lightning flashes, so to speak, inside the crust of the Earth. I had never known that that was possible.
Yeah, same here. And from reading this article, I didn't know that when you remove electrons from an atom, it can greatly accelerate the radioactive decay.
The decay rate. And so because of all this new science, they're realizing, you know, we could take radioactive waste and we could treat it and make it stable so it's safe. But right now, with the state of our technology, it is super expensive and super slow. We can't really do it.
Yeah.
But theoretically, we have done it. We can do it, but not on the scale we need to make radioactive waste safe again.
Yeah, that's an interesting possibility. So what do you mean by radioactive? How does something become radioactive?
Well, if an element is stable, it will have the same number of protons as neutrons in the nucleus of the atom. If it gets too many of one or the other, it becomes unstable. So with a high electrical force, you could smash together nuclei so that now you've created potentially an unstable element, radioactivity. Now, Fred, books have been written about earthquakes and electricity, and this is a topic, another topic I was not familiar with. I did not know that when people all over the world, and this is also explained in the scientific press, like in the peer-reviewed journals, that when people explain earthquakes and their observations of earthquakes, they frequently describe electrical phenomenon associated with being in an earthquake.
Yeah, so Walt Brown gave a really good list of, and these come from magazines, newspaper articles, of descriptions of what people see during an earthquake. I was really surprised by this too. Never heard of it before. For example, flames shot out of the ground. These are all quotes from magazine or newspaper articles.
So somebody's in an earthquake and they say flames shot out of the ground.
Another person, intense electrical activity. The sky was alight. Ribbon-like flashes of lightning seen through a dense mist. Mm. A chain anchoring a boat became incandescent and partly melted.
A chain?
A chain.
Melted because there was an earthquake.
Yeah, because of an earthquake.
We wouldn't think that this would happen. And Fred, sometimes people have said, reporters have tried to interpret this. And they said, well, maybe they saw sparks because there was an electrical utility box.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
These phenomenon are happening like in the forest where there's no electrical grid or anything.
Yeah.
They're happening all over the world, but go ahead.
Yes. globes of fire and other extraordinary lights and illuminations, fire on the rocks in the neighborhood, convulsions of magnetic compass needles on ships. So compass needles on ships are acting strange.
Wow, that is really interesting. So you have an earthquake under the ship, and their compass goes haywire.
Exactly.
Not because of the waves.
Yeah. Indefinite instantaneous illumination, lightnings and brightenings.
Mm.
Very frightening.
Sheets of flame. So, Fred, I'd like to quote from the journal Nature. They did an article on earthquakes, and they're describing the amount of electricity that gets generated in a normal earthquake. This article was titled Earthquake Lightning.
And this is, again, from Nature magazine?
Nature, which is, you know, the world's leading scientific journal. And here's what they wrote, the authors Finkelstein and Powell, James Powell. They wrote this. In some parts of the world, earthquakes are often accompanied by ball lightning, stroke lightning, and sheet lightning. We propose that the piezoelectric effect. Now, we'll talk about that later, right? But if you take granite with quartz in it and you compress it or you pull on it, you produce voltage. Quartz, when you compress it or pull, so you create a tension, it produces a positive or a negative electrical charge.
So this is on quartz. You can actually...
Quartz. And granite, wow, in the crust of the earth...
There's lots of quartz,
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, more than a quarter of the granite in the crust of the earth is made of quartz. More than a quarter by volume. So when you compress it, like what happened during the global flood, or put a tension on it, you're going to create a positive or a negative electrical force. Then they describe, Fred, in rock-like quartz, they say quartz produces a piezoelectric effect... And with a typical earthquake, they say with a typical seismic stress of an average earthquake, you would create an electrical field. And they describe, Fred, the generated voltage is about 50 million to 500 million volts.
Wow.
50 million to 500 million volts, which is comparable with the voltage responsible for lightning in storms.
So they're not saying that it was due to a utility box exploding because of the earthquake.
No.
They're agreeing that earthquakes,
right,
cause some really strange electrical activity that a lot of people don't know about, including myself before I read this article.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's this case of these New Madrid earthquakes that happened in Missouri, of all places. Mm. You know, earthquakes can happen in Colorado.
In fact, Fred, this is the 200th anniversary of the New Madrid earthquakes that happened back in 1811 and 1812.
Yeah. And so we've got on the public record that a U.S. Senator, Lewis Lynn, he sent a letter to the chairman of the Committee on Commerce, and he said the shock was accompanied by flashes of electricity.
Huh?
Another observer said that he saw many sparks of fire emitted from the earth. So that must, again, have been the transformers from public utilities.
Right. So this goes back centuries, these observations. And now let's find a way to test Walt Brown's theory. If, in fact, radioactivity was created in the crust of the earth during the global flood, which also Walt is so brilliant in explaining that that's where comets come from, the crust of the earth in the global flood, when the water erupted with enormous force, some of it reached escape velocity and became comets. That's why comets are dirty snowballs, and it became asteroids, which are flying piles of rock, and it became our meteoroids. That's what they are, and that's why asteroids are filled with the kind of minerals we have on Earth.
Yeah.
Comets, too.
Yeah. One thing I know is evolutionists claim that that's how life came here, right?
Yeah.
They got it backwards. They don't, is it possible that that stuff's there because it came from the Earth?
Right. Comets didn't bring all the water to Earth. If you find a speck of water out in the solar system, it probably came from the Earth, which is the blue planet, the planet covered in water.
That's right. And comets, they don't know where they came from, right? They have no clue where they came from. It's a serious problem for them. So they invented the Oort cloud that produces comets.
And
well, maybe the Oort cloud is Earth.
Is Earth. And if you find in a meteorite a speck, an indication of bacteria, rather than proposing that life came to Earth from dead outer space, maybe the bacteria got in the meteorite because it came from Earth.
It was expelled from Earth.
So now Walt Brown makes a prediction. If his theory is true that radioactivity on the Earth came from the crust of the Earth during the global flood and the upheaval that was the global flood, and that's why continents are covered in almost a mile deep of sedimentary layers with billions of dead things laid down, fossils, all over the world, what kind of prediction might you be able to make if Walt Brown is right? What should we find?
Well, interesting. He makes a prediction that if we're able to drill down into the moon just a little bit, that we should find little radioactivity once we get past just the very
surface
of Mars, of the moon.
Of the moon, and also Mars, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so
absolutely.
So here's the prediction. The impactors that hit the moon in the near side, far worse than the far side, the impactors came from the Earth. They brought the radioactivity to the moon. So any radioactivity we find on the moon will only be on the very thinnest part of the surface. The same thing will be true with Mars. Now, that's quite a prediction.
It is quite a prediction, and part of that's based on the Bible, right? Because the Bible says that it was a paradise. So I have to assume that the moon did not have radioactive materials inside of it. What's the purpose of that?
Well, right. Radioactive-wise, the moon should be inert. So should Mars. And we've seen, we mentioned recently, how creationist physicist Russ Humphreys published predictions of magnetic fields for Mars and, I forget, Mercury, not only the predictions, but the strengths, the relative strengths. And NASA has since confirmed his predictions that were published in peer-reviewed creation journals.
Yeah, so he made these predictions before the Voyager went off and took these measurements. Mm-hmm. You can go read the publications where these predictions were made. So here's another great prediction by Walt Brown. It'll be interesting when the day comes where I'm pretty confident the prediction will be proven true.
Yeah. And then, Fred, that's talking about the moon and Mars. How about on Earth? Where do we find the radioactivity on Earth? If the atheists are right, all the radioactive elements were created in stars. Like they say, we're star stuff. So shouldn't then radioactivity on the Earth be pretty much evenly distributed all over the Earth and through the crust of the Earth?
Well, that's what they would predict, right? But do we actually find that? No, of course not. It's not spread evenly across the surface of the Earth, right? What about the ocean floors?
Yeah, why is it that we have most of the radioactivity on the continents? That is so interesting. And when we drill deep into the crust of the Earth, the radioactivity is not spread out somehow based on the depth, but it's spread out based on the type of rock that they're digging in, which is not a prediction that would come from the radioactivity being deposited all over the Earth through meteorites and meteoritic dust.
Yeah, we have evidence for this. Germany's deep drilling program, they're not finding, you know, radioactivity based on depth. They're finding it based on rock type.
Mm-hmm. So, Fred, the atheist who believes in the Big Bang, they say that we're star stuff, right?
Yeah, I heard that the very first time I got interested in this debate. Somebody at where I work said, hey, you're just made of stars. I'm like, what? That sounded kind of silly.
You're made of stars.
Yeah, I come from stardust.
So,
Starman.
When they say that, they say it with great confidence, like you could hear it on the BBC or on Science Friday, that parody show on NPR. Of our program.
That's right.
Science Friday that airs on hundreds of stations. While
just
you're listening,
to parody our show.
You're listening to the real Science Friday, which airs on one radio station. So, Fred, the journal Science, one of the leading journals in the world, in 2002 ran an article by Charles Seif, S-E-I-F-E, and he said what you're talking about. He wrote, we're all made of star stuff. The Big Bang created hydrogen, helium, in a little bit of lithium and other light atoms, but everything else, the carbon, oxygen, and about 90 other elements that make up animals, plants, and the Earth itself was made by stars. Now, that sounds very authoritative, right? But he writes, the problem is that physicists aren't quite sure how stars did it, and why is that? And he's admitting that, which is good. Why is it, Fred? What's the problem for the physicist? Why can't they just say that the stars made these other elements?
Well, they know that you would need a higher temperature, like maybe 2 times higher. 2 times higher would be a serious problem.
In other words, the temperature you find in stars, the hottest stars, and you're saying to make these elements, you need temperatures twice as hot?
Well, actually not twice as hot. What about 100 times as hot? That would be 100? Really hot. 100 times. No?
Hundreds.
Hundreds of times hotter.
Hundreds. In fact, one of the fathers of the Big Bang Theory, George Gamow, he wrote this in a book called 1-2-3 Infinity. He wrote, and the physics of this hasn't changed since he wrote this, Fred, that the temperatures in the interior of stars are measured in tens of millions of degrees. That sounds awfully hot. Now, we can make things hotter on Earth. Yeah. But in laboratories, but that sounds awfully hot. Whereas, he continues, several billions of degrees are needed to cook radioactive nuclei from the nuclei of lighter elements. They need the temperatures to be hundreds of times hotter in order to make the elements that fill our solar system.
Wow. So they have no evidence that this can happen. It's just a story. So when somebody tells me I'm from stardust, that's just right. A story. So they don't have evidence to back it.
Yeah, so that's a theory. So if you wanted to establish your theory, you should show from physics how within stars you could make these heavier elements. It turns out you can't. So they should say, if they're honest, you know, there's this big problem with our theory. It looks like stars can't make heavier elements, but they can't get themselves to be that honest.
Yeah, they should say, well, and that means that my theory is really just a low-grade hypothesis.
Right. Now,
but they won't say that.
Fred, cosmologystatement.org is where physicists go who say, you know, the Big Bang has massive holes in it, and we really need to come up with an alternative cosmology, and that's being proposed. Even, I think it's at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences just a few years ago, they published an alternative to the Big Bang, which is much more similar to a creationist cosmology of a universe that has a center and boundaries. And, you know, this is a fascinating time to be alive.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, cosmologystatement.org. Go read it and read the problems with the Big Bang. Mm-hmm. And some pretty big name secular scientists have signed that.
Yeah, exactly. So, Fred, there is a laboratory over in the Ukraine, in Kiev, and it's called the Proton 21 Electrodynamics Research Lab. And they've been doing experiments, thousands of experiments, that help to establish the theoretical underpinnings of Walt Brown's work are actually experimentally verified there and elsewhere, but they've done this now thousands of times. They demonstrate nuclear combustion, and they have produced all known chemical elements, all of them, and their stable isotopes, which I think are about 300 different elements. And they've created these by generating an enormous electrical current, and they're demonstrating exactly what Walt Brown is saying. When you have a high enough electrical current, you're going to create all these different elements, including the radioactive unstable elements.
So wait a minute. So it includes these unstable radioactive elements that evolutionists will point at and say, hey, that's a clock. That's been going on for a billion or more years.
Billions of years.
And yet they can do this in a matter of moments with huge electrical currents, which is real interesting because one of the things it does, it knocks away electrons out of the atom, mm-hmm. and you produce this isotope that's already looks like it's really old. If you looked at it from an evolutionist eyes, now, it looks really old, but it isn't. It's now, brand new.
Maybe we could explain a little bit of this thinking about carbon-14, which we talk a lot about. Carbon-14 is unstable, so it decays with a half-life of about 5,600 years. So if you have 1,000 carbon-14 atoms, 5,600, 5,700 years later, you'll only have 500.
Yeah, if it decays at a natural rate.
Right. So very quickly, it will all be gone. So you shouldn't have any in a diamond, which is the hardest naturally occurring substance on Earth, very resistant to contamination. And unless it's sitting in a very highly radioactive uranium vein, It should have no carbon 14 in it, yet they do.
They do.
And so that's evidence that that diamond is not a billion years old, as they claim, because there'd be no carbon 14 left after just 100,000 years or 50,000 years, yet there's plenty of it in the diamond.
Yeah, because over time it evaporates essentially. It turns right into nitrogen.
Yeah.
So why is there still carbon 14? Was there some event that maybe buried carbon all over the earth too? Maybe? Possibly?
I think the global flood.
Or do you think meteors brought the carbon 14 to Earth?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
So, Fred, carbon 12 is stable, it'll stay forever. Carbon 14 is unstable. So when you have six neutrons and six protons in a carbon nucleus, you add up 6 plus 6, you get 12, carbon 12. It's stable. When it captures extra neutrons and you end up with carbon 14, which is, if I recall, 6 protons and 8 neutrons, it's unstable. That's the kind of thing that happens with the piezoelectric effect. When you take quartz and put it under pressure, either compress it or put tension on it, so you're pulling on it, you are generating an electrical field. And Walt Brown has a little experiment where he shows a little device he made. Anybody could do it at home. And you take quartz and you attach it to some wires. And when you press on it, it produces a spark that'll jump when you reach 4,000 volts. When you pull on it, the spark goes the other way because it's a positive versus a negative current. So this is getting really interesting because during the global flood, the crust of the earth, the crust is very thin compared to the size of the whole earth. Mm-hmm. What is the earth? About 200,000 square miles, something like that. So the crust is fluttering on top of the water underneath the crust, the fountains of the great deep. And every time it flutters like a flag waving in the wind.
Or maybe like a waterbed.
Like a waterbed. The waves that are created in the crust, so to speak, the peak and the trough, they are either being compressed or tension, and they're rhythmically creating positive and negative electric circuits.
Yeah, and wow, I'm surprised that we haven't thought of this sooner. Kudos to Dr. Brown. This is real compelling of what causes rapid radioactive decay. I had no idea the electric currents were happening with earthquakes. And because of this quartz argument you just made, and 25% of it is in granite, right? And granite's all over the surface of the earth, in the mantle. This is a perfect mechanism to create electrical currents to cause rapid radioactive decay.
It is stunning. It not only fits with the biblical account of God creating a Garden of Eden for us, but it fits with the scientific observations. Quartz is the only common mineral in the crust of the earth that has this piezoelectric effect. And as we said before, more than 1/4 of granite is made up of quartz.
Yep.
By volume. The 10-mile thick granite crust of the earth, when it was being compressed and stretched, it produced enormous electric fields, huge voltages, which were similar to lightning, but in tiny little regions of the crust of the earth at one time. And it's having this effect on the nucleus of atoms. It's creating radioactivity, and the nature of that, it's also creating rapid radioactive decay, rapid, like potassium argon, for example. I don't think there's enough potassium in the earth to explain all the argon in the atmosphere.
There isn't. That's another problem for the earth supposedly being really old.
Right. But with these massive electrical circuits through the crust of the earth, you're going to have the origin of the earth's radioactivity that is centered in the crust of the earth.
So it would help explain this argon that we don't understand why it's all there, because there's not enough potassium to create that argon in our atmosphere. But if these electrical currents occurred, we have an explanation.
And Fred, Walt Brown also predicted that when we go to the moon and go to Mars and we drill, we do these core drillings, not only will we find that whatever radioactivity is there is just in the surface, but as you dig down deeper, you will find fewer and fewer isotopes, which are the different versions of chemical elements.
Yeah. I like his argument with the stable version of helium, helium-3. You know, it's nuclear reactions is the only way we get helium-3, and yet we have them here. So they, you know, the evolutionists say that meteorites brought the helium here, but helium is real slippery.
It shouldn't be in the meteorites.
What was it doing in the meteorite?
Right, exactly.
You can't explain it.
So Kudos to Walt Brown. Thank you, Fred Williams. Our website, realsciencefriday.com. Please buy Walt's book and help us out. Support us.
Marriage is the very foundation of human society. But it was God's idea to begin with. What is God's plan for your marriage? How can you know? What can you do to learn and grow with your spouse to honor God in your marriage? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this deeply personal and critically important topic in his teaching series, God's Plan for Marriage. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.